How's everybody doing? Sorry I missed last week or 2 weeks ago. Glad to be with you now. You know, my class is a technology free zone, so anything that has an on and off switch has to be off and out of sight. Gone. Can't be seen. If your phone rings during class, you'll owe me a paper. So make sure it's off, because I don't like reading your papers. You don't like writing them. I want to go around and meet you guys, but first I want to introduce my family to you. Jojo, can we turn these lights off? Good, and those two, yeah. Thanks. That's my wife, Alita. We've been married almost 36 years. She's usually with me all the time. She's not with me on this trip. We'll explain that in a moment. Next one, Jojo. That's my family. Good-looking group there, huh? We'll start on this side. This is my baby right there. She's Jessica. Jessica studied here at the School of World Missions in 2010. And then studied at the School of Campus Ministry that I lead in Nashville. She married her husband, Barry, 2 years ago. And she and Barry are campus ministers with Every Nation Campus in a couple of the universities in downtown Nashville. They primarily work on a school called Tennessee State. Now, in the United States, for many years, African Americans, blacks, were disbarred from universities. So they created their own university. So there's 106 what we call HBCUs, Historic Black College and Universities. And they're predominantly African American. And so Barry and Jessica are the campus directors at what's pretty much an all-black university, which is quite a testimony in the American South, to have two, not just white, but very white. They're degrees of white, okay? So white isn't a color, it's a mindset, right? So my daughter's a little bit more, she got more black in her than Barry. Barry is about as white a white man as you can get. And so they work on that campus. Barry is 6'6". My daughter, she's the shrimp in our family. She's only 5'10". So they have no children yet, but we have high expectations for her progeny. We may get us a basketball player out of that group. Next to them, and this is my youngest son, Joseph, and his wife, Lee. Joseph works for Dave Ramsey Ministry. Any of you familiar with Dave Ramsey? Yeah, he's got a finance ministry, Financial Peace University. And my son works there in the IT department, manages a department. I've got 10 or 11 people that work for him. He played basketball at the university level. So he played in the United States, if you're good, they pay you to come to their college. So they give you a full scholarship. So he played on a full scholarship, pay your tuition and room and board. So he played college basketball. His wife, Lee, she works at our Every Nation office in Nashville. She's in charge of partner care. So she takes care of all of our MPD partners, which is great. I'm an MPD staff, so it's good to have an insider. Whenever there's any challenges with my partners, I call Lee. I get immediate service. It's awesome. I'll introduce their son later. And, of course, then my wife and I in the middle. My oldest son, Samuel, is right there. Samuel owns his own graphic design business. You've seen his work before. His company designed the Every Nation website. So if you've been on our website, that's his work. Or if you've attended any of our world conferences, he always designs all the graphics for the world conferences. His wife, Karen, works in our Every Nation office also. She runs our 10-day short-term missions program. Now, Greg Tipton is the leader, but she's the one that makes it run. So she works in the office. As a matter of fact, all of my kids are in the ministry somewhere with Every Nation or our local church there. So when we have our combined Christmas party, the Barker clan, we take up a major chunk of the audience. We're creating a dynasty there. It's a subtle takeover, the Every Nation office. This is my baby, my oldest daughter, Katie. She's 6 foot tall, so she's, this boy right here is 6'4", he's 6'1", she's 6. She's actually, her husband's taller than her, but you can't quite tell by that picture. Her husband, Ernie, is a South African. He was a professional rugby player. Yeah. Have you ever seen rugby? That's a man's sport. Yeah, he played rugby professionally there. They met, my daughter went to South Africa when she was 19 to serve in our AIDS orphanage that we have there. And then she went back at 20. That's when she met Ernie. It was love at first sight. And they were married in 2008. They managed an orphanage there for a while he was playing rugby. And then after one of his injuries, the doctor told him, if you want to be able to hold your children in the future, you probably ought to think about retiring. So he quit rugby. He's now full-time pastor at our church in Brentwood. He's the evangelist there. So that's the gang. Next slide. Oh, yeah. That's my grandchildren right there. Pretty good shot, huh? Let's just look at this for a while. I'm missing those boys. Okay, obviously you've looked at the picture. One child seems to stand out in the crowd, right? That's our oldest. That's Omalimo. He is South African. He's 6 years old. His mother was a crack addict who died of AIDS. And of course, in the process of giving birth to Omalimo, the AIDS virus, the HIV, is passed to him. So he's HIV positive. And he was abandoned by his mother, picked up by this orphanage. And my daughter and son-in-law were the foster parents for a while, but as soon as they could, they adopted him. So he's their legal son. He does have HIV, but with the medicine that he takes, it's not detectable. Problem, of course, the medicine's very expensive, about $1,000 US a month for the medicine to maintain control over it. He's a wonderful little man. His younger brother's right below him. Look at that look on that face. That's what we call in America. That's called trouble going somewhere to happen. Yeah. His name is Isaiah. We have all sorts of Filipino shortened nicknames for him. Ice is probably our favorite. Now, my wife is holding my youngest son's son. His name is Joshua Jude, but of course, that's way too long, so we call him JJ, of course, yes. That's JJ. JJ is, in that picture, he's a year and a half. He's in the top 99 percentile of size for children his age, so they are projecting his eventual growth to be around 6'7", which we're pretty excited about that. That'd make a pretty good point guard, we think. Good 6'7" point guard. My son playing basketball, he was 6'4", but he could shoot. So if you're white in America, the only chance you get to play is you're either really big and you hit people and get rebounds, or you can shoot the three-point shot. So he can shoot the three-point shot. So we're hoping a good combination. His mother's very athletic. And JJ, ever since he's been a kid, he's always got some kind of ball in his hand. If you kick it or throw it or hit it, he wants it. And so he has high ambitions. That's JJ. Now, I'm holding the youngest Kruger boy, so Omalimo and Isaiah Krugers. And this boy right here is Ezekiel, but we call him, some people call him Zeke, but Easy, someone called Easy? No, I call him ZZ. Yeah, because Z is good, but ZZ is even better, right? Double is always better. That's ZZ. I don't know how old he is in that picture. I think he's 3 and a half now, or 2 and a half now, yeah. And the youngest, who's not quite a year there, belongs to my oldest son. His name is Griffin. He's a cute little fella, isn't he? Now, one day before I got on a plane to come here, JoJo, last slide. My first granddaughter was born. I'm not sure how to act with a granddaughter. I've been beating and slapping these boys around for a long time. Apparently, I have to treat her a little bit better. So this is Karen Michelle, and she's one day old in that picture. So I get on a plane tomorrow because I got to go home and see her. My wife didn't come. That's why. When Karen was born, she said, "Don't make me choose between you and this baby, because you are not going to like my choice." So I didn't even make her choose. I just said, "Honey, I think you should stay home. I think that's probably best." So she's been staying and taking care of Karen. All right, that's all for the family slide. So thank you, JoJo. Let me get my notes here. Yeah. Great. So this is a good group here from all over the Philippines, huh? Okay, Archie. And what part of the Philippines is, and sometimes I like to pronounce it myself, so. Oh, I've heard that word before. Is that Dumaguete?
Yes.
Dumaguete?
It's in the Visayas.
Visayas, yeah. Okay.
It's right below Colon.
Okay.
It's near Cebu.
Yeah, all right. Raffi, yeah, from Iloilo. I know how to pronounce that one. Great. So that's Visayas also, right? Yeah.
By the way, 6-hour ride to Boracay.
Thank you.
Rojas, same island with the...
Oh, it is. Okay, great. Iloilo. Visayas again. Great. Tacloban, sure, I know Kix.
Yes, Kix.
You know, you've been in this class before.
Yeah, School of Campus Ministry.
I know, yeah. But you left in the middle, didn't you?
Yeah.
Did you finish?
I left first week of November. Three weeks before graduation.
3 weeks, yeah, okay. Fidel. From, wait a minute.
Ordoneta.
Yeah,
somewhere
I was going to try
nowhere
myself.
North Luzon.
North here, just north. Yeah. Just keep going. North of Baguio.
Down.
South of Baguio, okay. Jason from?
Gapan.
Where?
Gapan. They called us Gapanese people. Gapanese. So somewhere in Nueva Ecija.
Okay, wonderful. Rocky? Can you sort of turn your tag so I can see him? Great, thank you. Rocky, from?
Kabanatuan.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, Central Luzon.
Central Luzon. Yeah. So near Baguio, north of Baguio?
I think Central Luzon near...
All I know is Baguio, so that's the only one. Jovir?
That's right.
Jovir.
From Mindanao, northern part.
The safe part or the dangerous part?
The safe part.
Safe part. It's good to know. Henry, from,
yeah.
From I can't see it.
Tanawan, Batangas. 1 hour ride from Manila going south.
From where?
From here, going south.
Oh, good. Great. You didn't have too bad of a commute then, huh? 1 hour. Noel.
Butuan, safe part of Mindanao.
Safe part.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Your name's completely hidden.
Joseph.
Hi,
from
Joseph.
Tagum. It's about an hour's drive from Davao City.
Which means nothing to me. Davao City, where's that?
Mindanao.
Safe.
Also.
It is safe?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Neil.
Yeah, it's the RT Highway. It's in Baliwag, beside Bastos. besides Bastos.
None of that
going
means...
Going to Cabanatuan, 30-minute drive from...
Yeah. So close. Close to here?
It's close.
Close.
Maybe 2 hours.
Okay. Gio.
From Imus, just 20 minutes from Manila without any traffic.
When does that happen?
3 hours with traffic.
Yeah. Romar?
From Bayumbong, Nueva Vizcaya. It's northeast Luzon.
Going to you have Manila. Somebody at the School of Campus Ministry,
yes.
Don't you?
We have three.
Who?
Dennis, Dayan, and Miko.
Dennis, he's a... Who? Miko?
Yeah.
He's my problem child. You know, yesterday I had to put him in the hall of shame. He couldn't answer any of my questions. No, I love Miko. I like to tease him a lot. Arthur?
Yes, from San Pablo, Laguna.
Oh, you got a student here too.
Yes, we have three campus ministers.
Yeah. What are they? What are their names?
Robbie, Joffin, and Princess.
Yeah, I like all three of those, especially Joffin. She's my favorite. George.
From Batac, northern part of Luzon,
Batac.
The place of the late Ferdinand Marcos.
Okay. Yeah, okay. And what's your language?
Ilocano.
Ilocano, yeah, right. Like Ferdy, right? You look like Ferdy. A better version. Jerome, of course.
Yes, nice to be here, Clark. Pastor Paul.
Yeah. Abet?
Yep.
Abet.
Albert. My name is Albert. But
oh, sure. Short. Albert's too long.
Yeah.
Got to cut it short. Abet.
Yeah,
from where?
From Subic.
Subic, yeah, okay.
Town of Subic, not the Subic Bay. Subic Bay is a different place. Ours is Subic Town. It's a
same area?
About 10 minutes from Subic Bay.
Okay. Yeah. Mark?
Yeah, Mark from Tarlac, from Central Luzon.
Tarlac, yeah.
Rui.
You got one consonant and four vowels in that name.
I know.
What's that short for, Rui?
No, this is my real name, second name.
On your birth certificate, that's what it says. Huh? Why'd your folks name you that?
I don't know. Maybe my complete name is Jeffrey Rui. I mean, I was born in Jose Rizal's death anniversary, so they probably got the initials, J-R. And they just made the R up.
Just made that name up, huh?
Yeah. From Mikawayan, the first city, if you're going to the north, the first city of Bulacan, I mean, after Metro Manila.
Okay, great. Maybe I've been through it. I went to Baguio. Did I go through it?
Yeah,
okay. Joseph.
Joseph from Vigan, Upper North.
Vigan?
Yes. Five hours away from Baguio. Where the word began.
How do you pronounce it?
Vigan.
Vigan, yeah. You know what a vegan is? In America, a vegan? You know the term? Yeah. It's a certain kind of vegetarian. Yeah. Vegan, yeah. Jason.
Jason from Lukban.
From who?
Lukban.
Okay. Where's that?
South Luzon.
South Luzon.
30 minutes from Lucena. Lucena City. South Luzon.
Yeah, great. Jay?
From Kawayan City, Isabela. That's northeast Luzon.
Yeah, great. Ricky?
Lipa.
Lipa.
That's around 75-minute drive south of Manila.
Great. Yeah. Adrian?
Adrian from Santa Cruz, 30 minutes from Los Baños.
Oh, which direction?
South.
Keep
south.
Going farther.
Yes.
Yeah, great. Alan?
Good afternoon. I'm Alan from
Sorsogon. Hi, Alan.
Sorsogon?
Sorsogon?
That's the last city of the island of Luzon. That's where the province, where the town of Matnog, where you ride roller boat, roll on, roll off boat to the Visayas.
Okay.
So Sorsogon is known to be the gateway to the south.
Yeah.
And it's about 12 hours ride from Sorsogon to here.
How did you get here?
I rode by bus.
God
left
bless
at
you.
6 o'clock yesterday.
Oh my gosh.
I arrived at 4 o'clock this morning. I got caught in the traffic coming here.
Anytime you get too tired and you want to leave, just feel free to go. Okay?
I slept on the bus.
I'm glad you did. Okay.
Noel Molino, Cavite, South Luzon. 12 Cavite. Minutes away from Victory, Alabang.
12 minutes?
Yeah.
That's too close. Sam Tagaytay.
Tagaytay.
Yeah, I've been there.
Albuquerque.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been to Sonia's Garden.
Sonia's Garden.
Sonia's Garden. Orly.
Orly from Bacoor.
From who? What is that word?
Bacoor.
I can't see. Your banana peels are in the way.
All right. It's a gateway from Metro Manila going to Cavite. First city that you can enter as you enter Cavite.
Now, Cavite is a city and a province, right?
Province.
It's a province.
Bacoor City is one of the cities.
In Cavite, yeah. So it's, I'm looking at a map, so it's east of here, right?
South.
Okay. And what is Orly? What's that short for?
Orlando.
Should have known. Danny.
From General Trias.
Where is that? I've never heard of that.
Near the capital city of Cavite, Trece Martires.
So in Luzon?
Yeah, South Luzon.
Yeah, great. All right, guys, let's start on something here. So I missed last week. What did you have? What did you do? Who came and talked to you? Yeah, was he the only one? Oh, yeah, Carlos came, right? Yeah, that's good. I want to start with our inside-out transformation. I think those are notes you probably have, you just received. Inside-out transformation. The reason why I have the classroom set up like this is because I really prefer this to be a dialogue as opposed to a lecture. I think it's one of the most important things we can do is talk together about theological, hermeneutical, exegetical issues and learn together in a community. So this is my fifth year of coming to the Philippines, and we've done a lot of these classes with our pastors. And I think the thing that we probably get out of it the most is not necessarily my instruction, but our dialogue together as pastors. As we interact, as we learn together, the best learning is always communal. Communal learning keeps you from potential errors. Your perspective can always seem right until you hear somebody else's perspective. Then it gives a new insight, something that you hadn't considered. And very few of our Every Nation churches have the opportunity like you do to be able to come together with other peers and learn these things, talk together, dialogue, and interact. So it's a great honor for you and a tremendous blessing that very few people have. And I want to take advantage of that. So if I end up doing most of the talking, I would think this would be a failure or a lot less successful than it can be. Now, I know in the beginning, maybe you feel a little uncomfortable. Hopefully, you'll get over that pretty quick. I also know Filipinos tend to be very respectful of people who are leading, and so they don't necessarily challenge as much. But I wonder if we could just put that aside and I like it when people challenge what I say, question it, offer different possibilities. So that's what I want us to be able to do. We've got several microphones around. We keep the microphones primarily because we record this for people who can't make it. So try to talk in the microphone, but as much interaction as possible and dialogue. We're going to be doing a lot of things together. I guess we'll probably be together for a couple years, so we got quite a few classes. My primary goal, I mean, the main thing I'm interested in my teaching with you, I think there'll be other things. I know that there's a lot of things we do as pastors. There's a lot of organizational leadership things that we have to do that are necessary and important. And there's a lot of personal discipleship ministry that we do that's important. But my passion is for preaching. So my main focus for these 2 years is to make you better preachers. That's the main thing I'm interested in. That's the main goal. And we're going to talk about a lot of different things, but everything we talk about is tied into how we can proclaim the gospel more effectively. So we're going to look at theology, but not so that we are better theologians, but so that we're better preachers. We're going to do a class in hermeneutics so that the content of our preaching is more accurate and more powerful. We're going to actually look at some homiletic classes on how to incorporate all this material and actually do it better. One will be transformational preaching, and the other will be the art of persuasion. So we're going to look at the practical aspects of preaching when we do those two homiletic sessions. We'll probably do a Old Testament and New Testament survey course too. And the goal of that, again, is the content of our preaching. So everything my sessions are focused on ultimately is really about preaching. Because if you do everything else right, I mean, that's important and good, but the proclamation of God's word has always been and will still be the primary tool that God uses to transform lives. So one-on-one, small group ministry, I mean, we wouldn't be Victory without it. But it's the preaching of the word that for 2,000 years has been the mainstay of the church and the main responsibility of those who are called vocationally. So that's what we're going to talk about. That's the whole emphasis is on preaching to be better preachers. So give me some thoughts so far. This is an opportunity to put into practice. Just talk to me. Anything I've said so far. Somebody grab a mic and say something. I have plenty of time, so I'm just going to sit here and wait. The less I talk, the better my voice lasts. So somebody say something. Alan, yeah.
In my coming, I would like to change.
Yeah. The thing with the mic, let me tell you how the microphones work. Keep them on the whole time. Don't touch the on-off. JoJo will turn them on. He'll give you volume there. So just start talking to the microphone and then... If he keeps them on all the time, sometimes you get feedback and various things. So he'll turn up the volume as you get it. Go, Alan.
Since you've mentioned about preaching as the main thrust that you're trying to share with us as we study these lessons, I was just wondering how could it be culturalized since you are an American, we are Filipinos. So in that,
great question. I am an American, but I'm part Pinoy. I have lived here. I lived here 4 years, right across the street. Jerome and I were neighbors for a couple of years till he abandoned me. So I've lived here long enough. I preached a lot here. And I think I have a pretty good grasp on the culture. Now, life in the provinces is certainly different than Metro Manila. I had 2 years with other senior pastors from the provinces. So... hopefully, I'll be able to contextualize it. But a lot of that is why we want to discuss and interact. See? So that's really your job. So when I make comments, and then your comments are based on, in my context, this is how I would take that, or this is what we would do as Filipinos. So I think, you know, it's a dialogue. I'm going to give you some ideas, some principles, some truth, but it's your thinking through them out loud with your peers that will make it much more practical and applicable to you. Does that make sense, Alan?
Yes, thank
you. Yeah, great question. Thank you. Somebody else say something. Yeah, Joseph.
Comment on the two of you.
Yeah.
The Bible is primarily, we're taking the culture of the Bible, and the culture of the Bible plus the Old Testament and the New Testament culture, it's different, plus our culture, and it's great that we dialogue, because we will arrive in a right interpretation,
yeah,
right homiletics, and the people will get it.
Yeah.
The meat of the Bible. And I like that we have this, because it's really good to preach in a structured form, because lots of people attending our church has a big knowledge of the Bible.
Okay.
So it's good, and very blessed that we're doing this.
Yeah, great. I like that, Joseph. Yeah, Kix, as you're getting the microphone, and there's one right there, yeah. One of my favorite books on preaching is by John Stott, called Between Two Worlds. I don't know if you've seen that before, Between Two Worlds. But the concept of the title is that's a description of us, that we live between two worlds. There's the world of the Bible, which is a radically different world than the world that we live in. Then there's the world of our culture, wherever that might be. And I'm sure there are cultural similarities that all of you have, because you're all Filipinos. But I imagine the culture in Mindanao is different than Luzon. And some of you come from larger cities. I imagine that culture is different from more rural areas. So regardless of where we're at, our job, we stand between those two worlds. And our job is to bridge the gap. That's what the preacher does. He takes the world of the Bible and brings it into his current world. We're going to learn a lot about that when we do our hermeneutics class. So how do we, first of all, understand what was the original intent of the author? Who is his audience? What did those words mean to his audience first? And once we understand that, that's called exegesis. Then there's the application. Now, how do we take that and make it real in 2015 in Tacloban, for example, between two worlds? So that's what we're going to try to do in 2 years. So, Kix.
Yeah, I agree with that. Just comment on what Pastor...
Joseph.
Joseph.
Neil,
I'm sorry.
Oh, Neil, okay, yeah. Joseph, yeah, Neil.
It's really about taking the timeless truth from that verse and applying that timeless truth. There's always a timeless truth from the Word of God, and applying it in our context. And I think this would... Can I have a quick survey? How many of us here, we are 1 week delayed from the Metro Manila series?
Is that what you do? Yeah, that's what I would do.
Yeah. I was contemplating, I was praying about if I would go with the Metro Manila series. But after a lot of praying and thinking, I felt like I needed to go with the Metro Manila series. Why? Because I got used to just listening to podcasts. But then God told me that if you're going to be a pastor, if you're going to be a preacher, you better do the hard work now. So I think this, our sessions today would really help in just improving our skills when it comes to preaching, because one of our primary roles really is the handling of the Word of God.
It is,
so
yeah.
That's why from starting this year, we decided in a team that I'm gonna go with the Metro Manila series and just get what they discussed there and try to contextualize. And what helps is really, now I dig in more to the Word. I read more books. We have a resident theologian, so I would run my preaching through him, and then you cannot say that. He would tell me, you cannot say that. Okay. So it really, for us provincial pastors, so this is a great time really to just put in the hard work. And because it's not always that we're going to be 1 week behind from Manila. It's really a challenge for me. I said, Lord, I'm going to do the hard work now.
It's great. Thank you, Kix. Yeah. I'm going to start with this course called Inside Out Transformation. We'll only get half of it now. I'll be back in March, and I can't remember what our dates are, but the next time I'm with you, we'll finish and carry on. Generally, the way I'll do the next 2 years is I won't do one course and then finish it. I'll usually start multiple courses, and we'll be doing multiple courses as we go. So, but I want to do this one first because this becomes, glad to have you. Whoops. Grab your name tag back there, okay? And we'll talk later. I want to do this one first because it's a foundational message to me. It undergirds most of everything that I do. And its applicability is not immediately towards preaching, except in the sense that it sort of undergirds how I look at life and my approach to the gospel. So we call this a biblical model for lasting change. And Kix, you've been through this before, I think, so you get the benefit of hearing it twice. It's always better twice. The outcome-based objective of this seminar is to show how the gospel creates lasting change by destroying idols and replacing them with a new heart motivation. The real value of this seminar is personal transformation. I've been preaching for almost 36 years in vocational ministry, and out of all the things that I've learned and taught and understood throughout those years, this information I'm going to give you in this seminar has by far been the most helpful in bringing personal change into my own life. This is really about personal transformation. And especially in areas that seem resistant to change. Now, all of us in this room, we've been walking with the Lord for a considerable length of time. And you know that when you first give your heart to Christ, some issues seem to yield pretty quickly. Like they just go, and you don't have much problem with them ever again. But then there's some issues that seem to linger. Right? I mean, if we had a time of true confession, we could all probably talk about an area of our life that over the years seems to still be challenging us. And I found that the material here that I discovered in this has been more helpful than anything I've learned in my life in bringing real change into areas that seem to have resisted change for a long time. So I think as a minister of the gospel, Charles Spurgeon, who I'll refer to a lot, who's my hero, most people consider him the greatest preacher in the history of the church, certainly the most prolific out of all the people who've ever written. Charles Spurgeon's combined works, his written works, are greater than any Christian that has ever written in the history of the church. So prolific man, although he died at 56. By age 20, he'd preached 600 sermons already. 600 different sermons. Not the same sermon a whole bunch of times. And he's got one of the books that changed my life called Lectures to My Students. It's 28 lectures that he gave to his preachers. And he starts off, the beginning chapters are about the minister's self-watch, that our first task as preachers of the gospel is to pay attention to our own life, to bring personal transformation into our own life. One of the things that I helped with our Every Nation, our churches here in Metro Manila, when I first came, is we would have these Metro Manila staff meetings on Tuesday. And that Tuesday, we would talk about and decide how we were going to preach the message for Sunday. I found that very difficult to do, and I didn't think that's the best way to do preaching, because if preaching is just communicating content, then that's probably sufficient. But I think preaching is a lot more than just content. I think preaching is about the communication of a personally transformed life. And that the real power in your preaching is not how passionate or loud or even articulate you are, but how deeply has that truth transformed you. And so I helped us create a system whereby 3 months before the sermons are ready to preach, or we're going to actually preach them, they're already ready. Because I know if someone asks me to preach at their church and it's a message I haven't preached before, I need at least a month personally for preparation. At least a month. Because I need probably 10 to 15 hours to actually create the message, you know, which I can do in the first couple days. But then I need 3 or 4 good weeks to let God work into my heart in that message. So that when I give you the message, it's just not information, but it's a transformed life. So that's why I want to start with this. I think it's important. The best tool we have as preachers is our own personal transformation. The work of grace that the gospel is doing in our life to make us more like Christ every day. Leonard Ravenhill was asked one time how long he took to prepare a sermon. And he said, I need 2 days. I need 1 day to prepare my sermon, and I need 1 day to prepare my life. One guy was asked one time about a great sermon that he preached. He said, how long did it take you to prepare that sermon? His answer was 40 years. I've been working on that sermon all my life. One of the things that you find when you've been preaching for a long time, you have the opportunity to preach messages over a period of years. You know, there's some messages that I've done 10, 12 years ago and still doing them pretty much word for word a lot of times with me, maybe a new illustration or something. But I found that the messages get better. Not because anything in the content changes, but because the truth is more real in my life. And because it's worked into my heart deeper, it has a much more powerful effect on people. There's a strange thing to watch what had an effect upon one people at about this level a few years ago. Now, same word, same message, has a much deeper effect. Why? Well, the only thing that's changed, the only variable that's changed, is by the grace of God, I'm a little bit more like Jesus now. And that truth is more real to me. So this is really about personal transformation, not necessarily just so that we're transformed, but because of our public lives, that now that public personal transformation aids us in seeing other lives transformed. So a lot of the seminar was developed from the teaching ministry of Tim Keller. Maybe you're familiar with him. He's the pastor of Redeemer Presbyterian in New York City. And I've learned a lot from Tim Keller. He's a evangelical Presbyterian. I don't want to join him. I don't want to be like him. I'm happy to be Every Nation. I'm glad to be Victory. I want to be Every Nation all my life. I have been. I started in Maranatha. That was Every Nation Part 1. That's all I want to be. My main job, what I do, is I spend lots of time reading, listening, studying other people, and then incorporating their stuff in an Every Nation framework. So I like to take what other people are doing that's brilliant and helpful and useful, digest it all, and spit it out through an Every Nation worldview so that it helps us, because I'm Every Nation. So if you cut me inside, I just bleed Every Nation. That's what I'm about. So all my ministry, all my preaching is in Every Nation. I don't want to do anything else. So I'm completely and totally sold. I'm in. But Tim Keller has tremendously impacted me in this area. And I've taken a lot of this from various different things that I've heard from him. The follow-up course that we'll do, we call it transformational preaching, is also based on this and based on a lot of the things from Tim Keller that I've learned. The first sermon I ever heard from Tim Keller, I remember thinking afterwards, I said to myself, I don't know what he just did to me, but whatever he did, I've got to find out how he did that, because I want to spend the rest of my life doing that to people. Because when I first heard him, I encountered Jesus in a sermon in a way that I'd never had in my life. And so I appreciate the impact that he's had on my life. All right, that's all my introductory material. Are you ready? Number one, the focus of this seminar is on heart motivation. Heart motivation, not external behavior. A large amount of ministry is focused primarily on external behavior. The Bible testifies that God cares greatly about external behavior, and it places the primary focus on the heart and the interior life. Now, the question I want to ask you, men, is if the Bible places most emphasis on the heart, and I think it does, why do you think we tend to place most of our emphasis on external behavior? And I think we do. I think if you'll analyze and evaluate the last five discipleship or small group meetings you had, I think that most of your time was focused on behavior. Reading the Bible, praying, this behavior, that behavior. I think most of it. I think if you went back and listened to most of your sermons, you just take your last five, I think a considerable percentage would be focused on external behavior. So what I want you to tell me, I want you to think about this, why do you think we tend to focus so much on external behavior? Jason, I'm going to call on you. What do you think? Why do you think that's the case?
People is looking at us as a minister, as a leader. And can I comment on
Please.
Your first...
You can comment on anything you want. You know, yes,
in Revelation chapter 2,
yeah.
Jesus told in Ephesus, in the church of Ephesus, that you are good in teaching,
yeah.
You are good in... you are good in rebuking the people.
Yeah.
When it comes to hardship, you are very good. But when we look at it, Jesus is more concerned with our personal personal relationship with him.
Yeah.
It's not about the ministry that we're doing. It's all about the heart of being a leader. It's the heart, our hearts.
You've left your first love.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why do you think we tend to focus in our preaching on behavior so much? Why?
Can you please...
Try it again?
Say it again.
Okay. I think that pastors, preachers, tend to focus in their preaching on external behavior more than internal heart motivation. Why? Why, Jason? Fidel, grab that microphone and help him out. Why do you think? Why?
I'm thinking of... there's something in us that sometimes we want to please people. Sometimes there are way that we can... We want to be more engaging.
Yeah.
That's why we're more thinking about how to do this. And there's something in us that we want to... we have to do this, do that,
yeah.
So that one way or the other you'll be accepted, something
okay.
like that.
Yeah, whose hand? Is that Henry? Henry? Yeah. You got more mics than you know what to do.
1 Samuel 16, verse 7 says,
yeah.
The Lord does not look at the things man looks at, but man looks at the outward appearance.
Yeah.
This is a reality, I believe, that
Yeah, God cares more about our heart, but we as human, yeah, we tend to look at the outward appearance, we tend to look at the performance. And so I believe this is the reason why we tend to focus on the external behavior, because that is what people see.
Okay, yeah, Gio? Pass that mic down to somebody who's gonna talk.
Yeah, number one probably is because when we preach about external behavior, we think that people would, when they do that, they would be accepted or they would really be pleasing in the eyes of God. That's why most of the, and that would really equate to thinking that those kinds of behavior come from a changed life already. That's why when we preach that, that's what people think, that if I do this, probably I'm already a changed person.
All right. Arthur? And then Rui. Try to get a mic to Rui while we're waiting.
Yeah, I think they're using my minister's focus on external behaviors because it's easy to measure.
Yeah,
it's
great.
It's gratifying to the preacher. Yeah. If you say, read the Bible, and the people read the Bible, then they think it's good.
Yeah, great, yeah. Arthur. I think that's one of the primary reasons. It appears measurable. So last month, they only came one time to small group. This month, they come four times. They're growing, right? Maybe. Maybe not. External behavior may or may not be a good indicator of really a transformed life. But at least it's something we can measure. So it looks like we're actually doing something good and spiritual growth is taking place. You can decide for yourself after we're done talking about this if it really does measure what's happening on the inside. But at least it makes us feel like we're doing something good. Really, what you got? Same, yeah, okay, yeah, good. Yeah, Jay, get a microphone to Jay there.
I'm also thinking of the religious background we have as a Roman Catholic.
Sure.
That it's about being good.
Yeah, measurable, okay, great. What else, yeah, Jovir, what do you got?
I think because we humans, we are not capable of measuring the heart because we are sinners.
Okay, yeah, possibly. Neil, yeah?
Yeah, the first part of getting to the emotion is the first part is external modification.
Okay.
When as a preacher, we are logical beings. When they see your package and you preach on external modifications, you open up something to them, then you get into the heart. It's important that they see visual so that they can see they can go through the abstract. It's a package of the preacher and it's a package of the church. If we do something habitual, the person that's there wants to be involved in that, something big and something, I think this is good. So it's a first part of getting through the heart. That's, correct me if I'm wrong, Pastor.
I think I will, but not now. Alan.
Simply put, I think it's just plain, pure and simple, very easy.
That's what I'm looking for, that. It's quicker. How many raise children? Easier to focus on the external, isn't it? It's quicker, you know, it's just quicker. So stop doing that. If you do that again, I'm going to beat you. I'm going to take this away from you. So you get quicker results. It takes a long time to change the heart, doesn't it? I mean, you know, we raise kids, right? I raised four of them. And it just takes a long time to change the heart. So you focus on the external, it just seems like it's quicker. Which, that leads us to another one. Then it ends up making me look better. You see? It looks like I'm getting changes. But maybe I'm not. Because, let me give you our next point here. It is possible to change external behaviors without changing internal heart motivations. The same motives that create sinful behaviors, like lying and cheating, can be used to create moral behaviors like integrity and truthfulness. Now, let's just use an example. Let's use an example of lying. So people lie for a lot of reasons, don't they? We could go around, I could ask you, when you lie, why do you lie? And we'd all have different reasons. I think if you take the reasons why people lie, primarily, it's usually to get something they want. Right? How many men will tell a woman a lie to get something they want? And I know none of you fine men in your BC days ever did that, but there are people who actually do that. We tell a lie to get something we want. I would probably put that in the general category of selfishness. We lie for self. Another primary reason why we lie is to protect our image. I don't want you to think badly about myself, about me. I don't want to lose face before you. We could probably put all of those types of lies under the category of pride. I think probably all lying comes from one of those two motivations, either to get something, selfish, or to protect something, pride. Do you know that it's possible to motivate a person to tell the truth from those same motivations? It's possible to motivate a person to tell the truth using the same motivation of selfishness or pride. You could use, for example, with your kids, I might say, we're barkers. We don't lie. Barkers tell the truth. I don't want to catch you lying because we tell the truth. I'm motivating them to tell the truth out of pride. Now, they could become very honest people. And you think, look at their moral behavior. But the motivation is just as sinful as the person who's lying. Now, telling the truth is better than lying, because lying is always destructive, and honesty is less destructive. But before God, they're both a sin, and there's no difference. And so we have external behavior changed, but the internal heart motivation has remained proud or selfish. That's a scary thought. You see, when we focus on externals, we can usually get results. I started with Pastor Steve many years ago back in Maranatha. Let me tell you, we got results. We focused on external behaviors, and man, we got results. But you know, when Maranatha dissolved, it's amazing the number of people, even pastors, who just went crazy. I mean crazy. Like, just they got into all sorts of sins and just completely backslid. I mean, the people who, man, they were like the Green Berets. You talk about devotion and Bible reading and commitment. And yet, then something changes, and then all of a sudden, man, all that is just gone. So it looked like we were making these incredible disciples by focusing on external behavior. But the heart was never changed. I mean, not ever. In many cases, the heart wasn't changed. And so you can have opposite behaviors, same motivation. I've seen this in pastoring churches with families. There's a family in the church, and their children are the best behaved children in the church. They're the children who, in Sunday school, they memorize all the scriptures. They get all the prizes. They win all the awards. They do all the recitations. They're like the model kids. And then I've seen this happen. One of them hits, usually in America, it's about 13 or 14. And almost overnight, they go crazy. And they start getting into all sorts of crazy things. And you know, the parents' testimony is always the same. It's like, they say something like this. He didn't learn that in our house. I don't know where he learned that, but we didn't teach him that way. We raised him right. I wonder if that's true. You see, when you focus on external behaviors, you don't change the internal heart. You motivate people to act a certain way to get certain rewards. But what happens, you turn a certain age, and now mom and dad's approval isn't as exciting as my peers' approval. And so my heart has been trained by my parents to seek after that which gets me the most approval. And it happens to be smoking dope with my buddies. And so the parents say, we didn't teach them that, but really they did. They trained the child's heart moralistically. And then they get to a certain point and they just throw away what mom and dad taught them. And they go according to what their heart really desires. So we're going to focus on, we're going to try to go beyond externals and try to get into the heart. 2 o'clock, we need a break. We'll be back at 2:10.